Good morning, everyone. This title of the message is Jesus Heals, and I'm going to read from Mark 6, 53 to 56. When they had crossed over to the land of Gennesaret and anchored there, as soon as they got out of the boat, people recognized him, recognized Jesus. They ran throughout the whole region and carried the sick on mats to wherever they heard he was. And wherever he went, into the village and towns and countryside. They placed the sick in the marketplace, and they begged him to let them touch even the edge of his cloak, and all who touched it were healed. So this morning I want to talk a little bit about healing. This is kind of like a summary text. And so I wanted to talk about healing and three questions that I want to deal with here in a few minutes is, why did Jesus heal some but not all, seeing how he had the power to do so? And what has happened to the power of healing by faith? And will there be a time when all are healed? Ben Franklin said this: God heals and the doctors takes the fees. I think that's kind of you could take that as a pessimistic a view, a little bit of the doctors, but I don't know if he necessarily was thinking that. You could say that, you know, the doctors do their things, and ultimately in the end, God really heals. It's not really up to the doctors. They can do a lot of things, and but yet it's still up to God or the Spirit to move upon the body and to heal. There is no curing a sick man who believes himself in good health. Henrietta Amal said that. And I think there is some truth to that also. You have to recognize you're sick. You have to, part of the cure is beginning to recognize that you're ill to start off with. If you deny the illness, how can you start the process of being healed? In all the stories in the Bible, every one of them recognized that they were sick or ill or needed healed. And so thus that starts the process. The treatment is really a cooperative effort of a trinity: the patient, the doctor, and the inner doctor. Ralph Beecher said this. He was a Swedish physician. And I think even now we're starting to recognize that the wholeness of health is more than just taking a pill or going to the doctor or going having surgery. There's a wholeness of the body, mind, and spirit and soul. And they are starting to come back a lot more in a lot of different ways to move in that direction. Ben Franklin said this also: 'Tis an old saying that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Well, yeah, we always wonder why people continue to do things that we know are bad for ourselves. We have addictions. We have all sorts of things that we're dealing with now. We're heavily into drug addiction, opioids, and what have you. People know that they're wrong and they're addictive, but yet we still continue to do it. I think there's a lot more to say about addiction than I'm going to say here this morning, for sure. And another person said this, Polybius Cyrus. He was around Jesus' time. I'm sorry, I didn't get to that one yet. He was around 50 BC, before Jesus. There are some remedies worse than the disease. I got it out. And what I think of there is chemo. I think chemo is really kind of harsh cure for, it seems sometimes that people really suffer an awful lot to get rid of cancer. There's a lot of, but yet you have to go through that, and most times you get healed. But sometimes I wonder if the remedy isn't worse than the disease. Sometimes in some cases, it depends on where and where it is out, how far you're progressed along. The wish for healing has been the half of health. This is a gentleman, Sonora the Younger. This is the one that spoke around Jesus' time. So the desire to heal, to be healed, I think is what happened in most of the stories in the Bible. The people wanted to be healed and believe by faith. And so you have to desire, you have to recognize that you're ill and want to be cured, I think, along the way. You can take all the pills you want, And a lot of times you still end up with the same thing, but there's a wholeness that has to go all the way around. Jesus said to the 10 lepers, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit further into the message, the 10 lepers who came to be healed and only one came back, and he said to the one that came back, "Rise and go your way, your faith has made you well." And I'm going to go a little more into that, so I'm not going to say too much of that. But Martin Luther King said this, and then I'll get into the questions that I have put forth. In his book, Where Do We Go From Here, Chaos or Community, Martin Luther King reminds us that every person lives in two realms simultaneously, an internal and an external. The internal realms include ideas of art, literature, moral values, and religion, while the external realm includes the world of competition, conflict, manipulation, and management. In this latter realm, the so-called real world, the bottom line is often generated by arrogance and greed. Dr. King concludes that our problem today is that we have allowed the internal to become lost in the external, and we have allowed the means by which we live to outdistance the ends for which we live. So the conclusion is that we should live for the life to come, or the internalness, and we should look at ourselves in a more spiritual sense, and that is more important than what we have. We all know this, but yet we strive every day, and myself included, we have an external world in which we live, and so we get caught up in that. Why did Jesus heal some and not all? That is a really big question, and I don't really have a really good answer, because he had the power. You would think that he could have done that. Yes. Yes.
Maybe some of those people didn't want to be healed enough. But it just seems to me that sort of points out, I think there's a psychological aspect of healing in addition to a medical aspect.
Yes, there is.
You have to want to be healed. You have to
yes.
be positive about it.
A positive attitude goes a long way, yes. That's the healthiness of the internal.
Along yes. with sometimes an actual medical treatment.
Yes, they go hand in hand. There's no question about it. I'm not putting one over the other or any of that. I'm not saying that medicine and doctors' operations are not that all of this is a wholeness of health. But why didn't Jesus just heal everyone all around the world? I mean, he certainly had the power to do it. Why didn't he do it? And sometimes he wasn't always present when he healed somebody. He would say, you know, go and when you get back home, your child will be healed. So he wasn't necessarily present. Sometimes he would touch, but it wasn't necessary. The idea of that they would touch the edge of his cloak and be healed. Even Paul in later years had the power so great that they said that people would just want to touch his clothes and it would be healed. The power of God was that great. Now there are people in the Word of Faith movement and what have you who are utilizing that type of idea. You can go on TV and watch them. That you can make a donation and they'll send you a prayer cloth and you are supposedly be able to cure or heal yourself. I'm a little skeptical. I mean, I try not to be skeptical because I believe in, you know, people's faith. But it seems to me like when money enters into some of these things, I'm a little skeptical. I'm sorry. That's just the way I am. That's my nature. I'm a little bit skeptical. The placebo effect, I think, can play in here if you want to. But the example of Jesus here, just people just wanting to touch. And the woman that had a bleeding problem, she just wanted to touch Jesus' cloak. And that was enough. Her faith was enough. Faith was all it took. In most cases that we've just talked about, you have to have a desire and faith and believe that it will happen. I think that's somewhat a lot of it. But even then, it doesn't always happen. There's many a story, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you, as someone would tell you, that if you're not healed, if you go to a faith healing meeting and you're not healed, then your faith is not strong enough. That is part of another word of the faith, word of faith movement and what have you, the charismatic movement, that says that if you're not healed, if you go to a healing, and you're not healed, then your faith wasn't strong enough. You didn't believe it enough. And I'm skeptical again. Here again, my skepticism rises up and then says, okay, now wait a minute. I'm not quite sure that I believe that. The example that even Paul, in his great wisdom, and the example of people just touching his clothes and they were healed, there was an example of even he could not heal one of his closest friends, and almost to the point of death. And Philippians 2, and I will try to pronounce his name, Epaphroditus. That's about as good as I'm going to get. That was one of the early Christians that worked along with Paul, and the story is that you can read in Philippians 2, that he got very, very, very sick, and Paul couldn't heal him, and it really upset him that he couldn't heal him. And he was the point of death, and God somewhat healed him. And so, even though we believe in faith healing, we believe in healing, we go to the doctor to be healed, we take medicine, there's no guarantee. It just seems like there's no guarantee in this world. Sometimes Jesus spoke a word of healing. He says, go, and that's all he did. He spoke the words and said, you are healed, and that was it. Again, the Word of Faith movement claims that the words contain the power. So if you speak the right words, you will be healed. You can go and listen on TV if you want. Of course, there's always money involved in all of this along the way. I become very, very skeptical. So why is not everybody healed? Well, I was going to try to use a picture of the yin and the yang picture. It's a Chinese symbol. Most of us probably know what it looks like. It's a circle with a dark side and a white side in it. And the idea of that symbol is that opposite or contrary forces may actually be complementary of each other. They are interconnected, and they are interdependent of each other. And there's why I go for why not everybody is healed. Is because that we live in a world of duality, a world of good and evil, and what have you, and there's a certain amount of balance that has to be attained in this reality, in this realm. And once it's all set, then things happen that, my belief is, if you get rid of the duality, this reality is gonna collapse. It has to have both good and evil in it, in this reality in which we live. In order for it to live, the tree of knowledge of good and evil has to have the duality in order to live, for us to live. So there's no way that we can come away that Jesus could have or would have healed everyone, even though he could have. I think he understood that it would upset the power of balance, and knew that he only healed some. Does that give us any comfort? Well, I don't know. I think the reality of it, when I die and I move from this life to the next, then is when I will be healed. And I think Jesus is more talking about spiritual healing than really a physical healing. I think the Bible in the New Testament is talking about a spiritual inner healing in which we are comforted where we are at, no matter what we have to deal with. I think that is where a healing begins. When we come to the point where we say, okay, I'm comfortable with where I'm at, I'm gonna journey from here, even though it may be to the point of death and dying. I've shared this idea once before about, why do some people die young and some people die old? And it's a theory, an idea is that some people die young so other people can live longer. It's not a real, some people don't get a little not real comfortable with that idea. But in some respects, I think that's kind of like the yin and the yang. Some die so so others will live longer. I don't know. That's just why I think that things happen that way. I could go a little bit more into it, but I want to move on. What happens to the power to heal by faith? The traditional answer to that question is that when Jesus laid his hands on the disciples, it was passed out to the point, they transferred and transferred until it got weaker and weaker, and it finally disappeared. That is the traditional view in the Christian faith. That it just kind of, in the early apostolic era, it began to fade, and so it doesn't happen anymore. Now, again, there's a lot of people who disagree with that, and I still think that there are, you can go online and you can have example after example of people who are healed who doctors cannot explain why they got healed. So to me, I think Jesus is still healing. The power of healing is still alive and well. We just don't want to, we don't recognize it or lift it up as the way I think we should. I'm sure, I don't know if anybody here, I thought maybe by now somebody would have a comment or remember somebody that may have been healed, and they were sick to the point in which there was no health, no way out, and suddenly they were miraculously healed and they were alive. But apparently no one has an example to give, neither do I necessarily, but I have one online, and there are numerous ones in which you hear and read about. And every now and then you do hear things that, why in a tornado or a hurricane, like down in Panama City or in Florida down there, why are some people spared and other ones not? I mean, we don't know that answer. That's an answer we don't know. So some people believe, I still believe that there is faith healing. There are a lot of people who have gone to healing services. Here again, you have to be personally aware of what's going on around you. There's a lot of quackery, as far as I'm concerned, that goes on. But I do believe in faith healing. I do believe that faith heals, and that is. So what is faith healing? I believe there are two examples. I'm going to use two examples. Faith healing is more than just believing that I can be healed. Faith healing, I think, reaches on and past what you really want. Is faith about just desiring something and getting it? There's a what's her name that sang that song about a Mercedes Benz? Janis Joplin, who sings a song about, oh Lord, she wanted to buy me a Mercedes Benz because all her friends drive Porsches. and she's willing to make amends in order to get it. So is that where our faith ends? Where we say, okay, we just come to God and say, I want this and I want that, and that's it? I mean, is that all what faith is about? I think faith reaches past the point of once. Yes, Dan?
I never figured that the Lord would give you anything material to be prayed for.
Well, there is within the Christian faith those who believe that you are to have a healthy, wealthy life here now. You can. I know. I have my brother. I'll give you my, which I probably have told you before. He's a messianic, and he believes that that he at one time he kind of got. I don't know if he still does or not. That if he did the Old Testament laws, what Yahweh, the God of the Old Testament, wanted him to do, he would live a healthy, wealthy life until his wife died. And his wife told me, the last words that I can remember her saying is, God told me that this wasn't supposed to happen to me. And so she was quietly aware of, and believed that she was not supposed to get sick. But I think in that case, their family had, her sister died of breast cancer, and she was the second one to die. So she wanted to use different methods before it got to the point where it was too bad, and then she went and got chemotherapy, and it was a little bit too late. And so there is that idea that God will give you something if you have faith and do what he says. That's alive and well. And not only in that movement, in the Word of Faith movement, it's the same thing. That God will give you a healthy, wealthy life here on this earth. That's what they're talking about. And I'm not I disagree with that. I mean, just because I'm a believer in Jesus Christ does not mean I'm going to be healthy and wealthy all my life, and I'm going to have a good life. I don't believe that for a minute.
That's what you consider your riches. Some people are rich with hardly anything.
Right. Right.
Because they're happier and healthier than.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you pray for a new truck then?
No, I'm just happy with my restored one that I spent 2 weeks on. I have never really prayed for wealth, and I've prayed more for wisdom than I have in for wealth even in the beginning of my life. I go back to Solomon, you know, who could have prayed for riches or wisdom, and he prayed for wisdom. And I, in my younger years, I still believe that that's true. I prayed for wisdom. I don't know if I have any, but, you know, I'm not looking for wealth. I'm looking for, you know, just a comfortable life to do the things I want to do. I'm not looking for great wealth. There are some people who desire that and who are very successful, and I don't think they're any happier than anybody else. Riches are what's within, like Colleen said. Riches are what's in. You can be content wherever you're at. I firmly believe that. And so that's a type of healing too. So if you can become comfortable no matter where you're at, aren't you healed in some way? You're healed in a spiritual sense. But if you're constantly desiring something and want something and you know, you never have enough, well, you're not healed. I use the example of Cain and Abel, who when he offered his sacrifice, he wanted something. He just went there to say, okay, here, God, take this. You know, he just wanted something. Where Abel was blessed, he lived in the blessing. He went there and said, here, God, it's all yours, but I'll give you this here. I'm living in the blessing now. Well, Cain was always wanting to go like the person who desires to have something. Every time I want something, by faith, I'll pray to God and I'll get it, right? And that's the way of Cain in some way, that, in this example. He wanted something and that he wanted a blessing. Where Abel was already living in the blessing. And I think Abel looked past, by faith, looked past what he wanted and realized that he was already living in the blessing. And the story that I'm going to use in Luke is about the 10 lepers who, the story is in Luke, there was 10 lepers that came outside the village between Samaria and Galilee, and they stood at a distance and they shouted a loud voice, Master, have pity on us. So the 10 of them wanted pity, Jesus had pity on them. They wanted to be healed. That's all they wanted. They just wanted to be healed. That's it. And they were happy. And so he said to them, go show yourself to the priest. So they had a, by faith, at least by faith, they had to go and start walking away and go show yourself to the priest. And along the way, they were healed. But one of them returned back, and Jesus asked him, well, where are the rest of you? There was 9 others. Where did y'all go? And he is the one who saw past what he wanted and realized the power of Jesus and looked beyond that. And Jesus says, rise up, because he kneeled before Jesus in his humbleness and Jesus said to him, rise up and go. Your faith has made you well. So faith, to me, I see here as an example of faith. This one person looked beyond what he actually got to something greater. And I think that's what faith is. Faith is not necessarily just desiring something and that's it. It's reaching beyond that and beyond that. And I think that's an important thing about healing. You look beyond what you really want to something greater, an inner peace. Can or will there be a time when we all are healed? Another example, before I go on, I think where if you talk about the duality and the yin and the yang and the opposites being complementary or interconnected or interdependent, Jesus used the parable of the wheat and the tares or the wheat and the weeds. There's a spider coming down to see me. Did you see it? No, he's just a spider. He's all right. There he goes back up. Sorry. Anyway, Jesus used the wheat and the weeds to say a parable was about a farmer who sowed a field of wheat, and he went out the next morning, and suddenly there was wheat and weeds out there. And the workers said, oh, should we go out and pull up all the weeds? And Jesus said, no, because if you pull out the weeds, you're going to pull out the wheat also. So and so the two were interconnected. He said, wait until the time of harvest, and then we'll separate them out. So at the point of death, well, all this bad stuff that we have in us and will be gone, and we'll be left here or burn off, and we will be the wheat will be taken out. Because how do we separate the good and evil out of us? All of us have that built into us. We're not perfect human beings by any stretch of the imagination. At least I don't know of anybody. I'm not judging you. Maybe you are perfect, but I don't think you all see yourself as I don't think too many of us see ourselves as perfect. You know, beauty is one thing, but perfection is another. We are beautiful people, but perfection is... So in order to make us totally healed physically, again, it's not possible in this reality. But there is a time, as the Bible talks about, when that will happen. And again, I'll go to Revelations for that. And this is one of the few verses, a few places in Revelations in which I appreciate very much. It's towards the end. Revelations 21:3. I thought I had it marked, but I don't. It talks about 21, about a new heaven and a new earth. Now, I'm one who believes that there is a universe called the tree of light, life, and there's also a universe in which we live in, which is the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And so the new heaven and the new earth, as far as I'm concerned, is not the destruction of this galaxy or this universe and the replacing of it with something else. I think we simply move over to the another reality when we die and we pass and we move over. And he says that there will be a time when he will wipe every tear from their eyes, and there will be no more death, no more mourning, nor crying, nor pain, for the old order of things are passed away. And he says, he who sits on the throne says, I am making everything new. It depends on how you read that. I think when we pass from this life to the next, we are going to be, the old things are going to be passed away. I mean, I firmly believe that. There's going to be a lot different. It's not that we are not going to feel emotions. It's just that we're not going to be drugged down into, you know, the pain and agony and the anguish sometimes that comes along with this life. I mean, I don't care who we are. There's anguish that comes with this life. Loved ones pass away. People get diseases. With things we have to deal with every day of our life, there's anguish that comes along in our life. And I think that's going to be gone. I don't think the new life is a monotone life in any stretch of the imagination. It's probably a lot more activity than it is here. Then I go down to chapter 22, and this is my closing thoughts. And it's about the restoration, it's titled here, Eden Restored. We go back to the time in which, before the tree of good and evil was realized. That's the whole way back into Genesis again. And we go back to where things should be. And he said, the angel showed me a river and the water of life as crystal clear and flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb down the middle of a great street of the city. And on each side of the river stood the tree of life. Now you can interpret that in various different ways. I think a river with a tree on both sides to me means I'm going to interpret that this morning as no duality. There's going to be it's going to be about life on both sides. There's not going to be no opposing view. It's going to be all about life. It says it's bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding here 12 sacred geometry and all that 12 and 40 days and all this kind of stuff. All has deep meaning past the actual meaning of the numbers have great meaning in the Bible. I'm not going to go into that because it's a little more than I can really try to explain. And yielding fruit for every month. And the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. I take that as the healing of the places and that we're just going to be healed. No longer will there be any more curse. Well, that means there's not going to be no illness, no decay. You can take that in however you want. And this is the place to come. And the throne of God of the Lamb will be in the city, and his servants will serve him, and they will see his face, and his name will be on their forehead. And he said, there will be no more night, and there will be no need for a light or a lamp or a light to the sun, for the Lord will give them light, and they will reign forever and ever. Time will be no more. So night, if there's no night, just day, then time as we know it is going to be different. Isn't that what the text is saying? There's no night, there's no time. We don't understand that. And we will be healed and we will live forever. I think that's a wonderful way to look at being healed. At some point in time, maybe we suffer in this life in some ways, a lot of different ways. But this is still a good life. I don't think we should be drugged down by whatever we have to deal with. Yes, there are times when we move up and down. That's the way it is. But, you know, there is a better life coming, for sure. We should enjoy this life here and do the best we can. I'm going to say amen.
Show the world your infinite goodness and mercy. Amen.